choked up a little bit there. Nate Allen joins us on the Fidelity Communications Hotline. He's been covering the Hogs for decades. Nate, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
Doing all right, Wes. How are you doing?
I'm good. We were just discussing some of the, you know, the NCAA committee is meeting up in Indianapolis, and they're talking about some changes, some recruiting changes. But one of the things that they're really talking about and said they're going to really target and they want to work on are some of these off-the-field coaches, the staffs that are getting out of control. Bowlesby said that he knows of a staff, a football staff, that of 97. They've got 10 on-the-field coaches, and in their staff they have 87 other people. Any guess who that might be with such a large staff?
Yeah, it wouldn't be in Tuscaloosa, would it, by any chance?
Now, he didn't mention it, but I did see George Schroeder say, yeah, he would be talking about Alabama.
Yeah, it's there's so much of it has gotten out of hand, and you know, you got that, and you got the Harbaugh deal with the camps and wanting to, you know, practically take his team to Europe to train and that type of thing. And it really gets I don't know how fans can put up with it. Not so much just, you know, I mean, I don't care that they care about how many, you know, staffs and everything are, but they're paying for all this in ticket prices. I mean, the costs keep going up, and just kind of the needless buildings keep going up, and I don't know where it all ends, but the arms race has gotten ridiculous in college athletics.
It is crazy, man. All you have to do is go across the SEC and look at all the fancy new buildings, facilities, workout facilities, the stadium expansions, and a lot of that's the SEC money, you know, the SEC network money, and then the big check they're getting from the SEC every year. And, you know, they got to spend
it
somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, but I don't know how long that keeps up with, because, you know, ESPN's laying people off right now, and you kind of wonder, the next time those contracts come up, are they going to be as lucrative as they've been? And meanwhile, they keep spending and spending. But we'll see how it all turns out.
We're talking with Nate Allen. He's on the Fidelity Communications Hotline. Nate, you guys got to talk with some of the players after practice yesterday, some of the coaches. The thing that jumped out to me yesterday, or maybe the running backs, is there a commitment this year? I thought they lost their identity last season. The ability to run the ball when you had to, when the other team knew you were going to run it. If they could have ran the ball last year, they beat Missouri. They beat Virginia Tech. They start running the ball and milking the clock and put that game away in the second half. I thought they lost that ability last year. Is that a priority, do you believe, in their mind this spring?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's an irony. You had the SEC's leading rusher in Raleigh Williams, and so the offensive line did do some blocking. You don't do, you know, you don't have the league's leading rusher if you don't block. But when it came down to the goal line, the third and ones, the absolute, you know, got to make yardage, they didn't do it. And exactly right. If they could have run the ball, you know, both the Virginia Tech game and the Missouri game, they win. And that's a definite point of emphasis. I mean, you saw the scrimmage last Saturday where it was run, run, run. It was back to the Bielema Wisconsin formula. And I think what happened, you had a creative offensive coordinator, and a lot of that was good. They needed more creativity. And you had, you know, four or five senior receivers last year. You know, you'd be a fool not to take advantage of them. But they did get away from their identity, and I think you're seeing a concerted effort for them to run the ball. I know Dan Enos was what he was most proud of last Saturday's scrimmage. He said, yeah, they carried the ball. You know, he had over 50 carries, and they didn't fumble, he said. And that's important. Didn't turn the ball over, and he said that was an area that was a problem last year, was turnovers. So that is a concerted effort. Be more physical. I think you're going to see just a more of a ground and pound approach, but they'll, you know, obviously you still got to throw the ball, and they still have, you got Jared Cornelius and you got some tight ends at Austin Cantrell and some others that are and some really good receiving tight ends as far as C.J. O'Grady and some of those like that you know, you got to throw the ball to them as well. But I think you'll definitely see a more concerted effort to uh, control the clock. It helps your defense when you can run the ball because they're not on the field as much. And, you know, that defense got exposed last year a lot.
Yeah, and I think this year, Nate, going to the 3-4, it's going to be a struggle. I mean, we see how slow the process is. And then, you know, summer, fall camp, even in next fall, it's going to be a process with this defense. I think hopefully it's one of those cases that the defense starts to pick it up at the end of the year. But my point is they need the offense to kind of carry the load early in the season. They need the offense to be able to run the ball and keep that defense off the field. I think the offense needs to protect the defense at least early in the season, maybe the entire year. I think it's more important than ever to have a good running attack. Defensively with this 3-4, what do you see? What's the best case scenario with the 3-4 defense? You think they can have it installed and learned and feeling confident and knowing what they're supposed to do by the start of the season?
Well, they didn't have much confidence last year, so I think any confidence will be improved because things really got, you know, they just couldn't stop any. That was funny. 2 years ago, they couldn't defend the pass and really defended the run pretty well. Last year it was reverse. You know, their pass defense got better, but they couldn't stop the run. So I think at a confidence standpoint, if they do anything, they're going to be more confident than they were last year. I don't know. You know, you talk about base defenses, and you know, I don't really consider the 4-3 their defense last year. I mean, let's face it, with all the spread formation teams, they were playing nickelback more than anything, and to some extent, that'll be true again this fall. Although Paul Rhodes does say that with the 3-4, that he believes they can stay in a base defense more often than they have in the past, and that really when he was defensive coordinator at Pittsburgh, and that they were able to keep a 4-3 base even with all the spread formation teams. So it'll be interesting to see how all that, you know, plays out. It is a process, and you're already seeing them, you know, mixing and matching and trying players at different positions, which is what they should do in the spring. That's what you got spring ball for. And they're going to be kind of some square pegs and round holes till they get this thing figured out. But I think it's a positive. I think it just, if nothing else, the players seem to embrace it, and after last year on defense, they need to embrace something. So I think in this case, it changes good.
Nate Allen's on the Fidelity Communications hotline with us. Nate, we talk about the need for playmakers on offense, and I agree. You want a guy that can take it, you know, 70 yards to the house at any moment. Those are great guys to have, but I think you got to have playmakers on defense. You got to have those studs on defense that are game changers. And last year in the SEC, it was the year of the defensive ends. And all you have to do is look at some of these mock draft projections and see all these SEC defensive ends that are so highly thought of that'll go in the first round. And I think Arkansas played every single one of them. Does Arkansas have a playmaker on defense, one of those studs? Have you seen one of those guys?
Of course, last year we thought it'd be Dietrich Wise, and he got hurt, and you know, played hurt, and wasn't you know the player that he could have been because of his injuries. I think if you were looking at just somebody you thought who's going to be a big playmaker, that it would certainly be Sosa Aguim. He's you know was a five-star recruit, and he's got five-star ability. It's just a matter of whether he comes into his own or not. But I would, if you're looking at one guy, I would think he on defense has the chance to be, you know, a big difference maker. You've got some others here and there. You know, Ryan Pulley at cornerback really played very well last year. The secondary has some. Kevin Richardson is a versatile guy who seems to make plays. There are some other ones, but Aguim would be where I start, and they don't have enough of those guys, to tell you the truth. I mean, that's going to be whether they can develop them is going to be a big key, because right now you are basically looking at pretty much a no-name defense, and you're really going to be dependent on the offense to control the ball to help them out till they develop, you know, those guys. And if you had to look for one guy, it'd be Aguim.
All right, I want to shift gears. Talk a little baseball. I heard you last night in the post-game press conference with the team and Dave Van Horn. Man, this team can hit the ball, can't they, Nate? They are fun to watch.
They are fun to watch, and they've already hit more home runs than they've hit last year. They've already won more games than they won last year. I mean, I didn't know they'd be this good, but I did know with Dave Van Horn they weren't going to stay down for long. And they've gotten some outstanding pitching, particularly when you go back to thinking that, you know, the two they were really counting on, especially Isaiah Campbell. He was, you know, they were looking for him to be the ace, Friday night starter, and they lose him for the season. And then you had Keaton McKinney, who's been hurt a lot, but when he was healthy, you know, he was a freshman All-American a couple of years ago when they went to the College World Series. But, no, it's been a fun team to watch, and I knew they'd bounce back from the LSU series. That was a horrible meltdown they had. I remember Arkansas, one of Norm DeBryan's, maybe his best team in 1985, had that same thing happen to him in the College World Series against Texas. They had the game won and just had one of those Murphy's Law innings when everything fell apart. And you had, you know, your reliable shortstop, Jax Biggers, hadn't made one error all year. And has the two out game ending out and throws it away. It just happens in baseball. But I just saw this team having too much character. And I thought last Sunday they played well against LSU. They just ran into a great pitcher and, you know, didn't hit them. And LSU made some great defensive plays. I mean, there were about three or four plays their shortstop made that saved the ball game for them. But I think it's going to be a good ball club. It's going to be interesting now, the remaining two games against Georgia, because they basically threw up a sacrificial lamb against Blaine Knight last night and saved their two best pitchers for tonight and tomorrow. So that'll be an interesting facet to just see whether they kind of conceded one and hope to win one or two. I know Trevor Stephan's pitching tonight, and he's really pitched into some tough luck. Has pitched some great games, and he was should have won Saturday's game. Leaves with an 8-2 lead, and the bullpen falls apart, and the defense falls apart. He doesn't take the loss, but he didn't get a win he should have received. So we'll see, and we'll check. This will be a big determining factor how the bullpen responds, because their closer, Cannon Chadwick, has had some problems the last couple of games, and we'll see whether they go with him or Dominic Tacolini or Jake Rindel as a closer. It's definitely a good ball club. They've been good really in all phases, hitting, defense, and pitching.
How cool was the Alex Gosser moment last night?
That was a great moment. Alex is one of the most popular players. He still has a record that no one's going to duplicate, because he got a standing ovation his very first at bat as a Razorback. And that was back when he was a freshman and was freshman walk on and was redshirting. And then late in the year, they lose both their catchers to injuries. And I remember against A&M, he goes to bat and the entire, full house bomb stadium got an ovation. And boy, his team, even though it was like an eighth inning home run, just adding to the 14-4 victory. But that dugout went wild to see him hit his first home run as a collegian, as a senior.
Nate, it's been a pleasure. Thank you as always. It's great to talk a little Razorback sports with you. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
You do the same. Have a good Easter weekend, Wes.